Blog Talk Radio.
They said we could
stay in the
spells at long enough.
Absolutely.
Spend some time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country. Leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone. The best in music, too. Spend some time in the country. We've been waiting here for you. Here in the country, waiting here for you.
Live from Ontario and heard around the world, welcome to In the Country with Dave Woods. This is the place for up-close and personal interviews, as well as great country music from our featured guests. So sit back and relax. Today's show starts right now.
Canadian country artist Charlie Major hit the number one spot on the country charts 6 times with his 1993 debut album, The Other Side. Who can forget his first big hit, I'm Gonna Drive You Out of My Mind? Charlie went on to more success with subsequent albums and CMT videos. Along the way, he earned 3 Junos and 7 CCMAs. His most recent CD, Shadows and Light, which he co-produced, features a duet with Canadian rock legend Kim Mitchell. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Charlie Major. Hey, Charlie.
How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, very good, thanks.
Hey, it's great to have you on the show. One person we have in common over the last 10 years or so, I've done some songwriting with Barry Brown.
Oh, there you go. Great guy. Wonderful.
Yeah, and you guys, with the debut album back in 1993, he wrote a couple of the hits on there, and you had 6 number ones from that album. Could you have predicted that when you were putting it together?
No, I didn't even predict having one, actually. So, you know, predicting 6 would have been crazy. You know, absolutely. You know.
Now, as the singles came out, for example, I'm Going to Drive You Out of My Mind, and you saw it start to climb the charts, it must have been pretty exciting.
Well, you know, I mean, it certainly was, because, you know, you work all your life, you know, towards a goal, and, you know, it's just nice to see things come to fruition, you know, after you know, years and years of, you know, paying your dues, and so, it was quite rewarding.
And I was reading up on your time before that, you had done quite a bit of traveling with your music as far away as Spain before you got your record deal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just the usual paying your dues story, you know. You know, flame bars and clubs and, you know, whatever. And, you know, just, as I said, it's the usual, you know, paying your dues story, you know, that most people go through, except the ones that go on the Canadian Idol, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, do you think in that case, because you, as you say, paid your dues and finally got the record deal, but there was a lot of time and work before it, do you think it's a sweeter kind of reward as opposed to, like you say, on an Idol type of show, you get it pretty quickly?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, because I wasn't in the position, you know, to be on an Idol show, so I don't know, you know, but, you know, there is a lot of satisfaction in, you know, looking back on all the hard work you've done. And,
yeah.
And
yeah, I'll bet knowing that you basically earned it by paying the dues. Now, how would you label your music? You found success on the country charts, but I know your music is a little more diverse than that. Do you have a label, or do you use a label for your style of music?
I kind of like to, you know, well, if anything, I suppose I'd probably call it country rock, you know.
And, okay.
I go back to the days of, you know, my heroes were people like the Eagles and Neil Young and, you know, Buffalo Springfield and James Taylor, you know, people
yeah.
like that. And, you know, by the time I came around, I mean, rock radio, you know, was just too rocky, you know, for what I was doing. And country radio, you know, just wasn't quite, you know, rocky enough yet, you know. And
right.
around 1986 or 87 when, you know, country radio started to change. And started to accept people like, you know, Steve Earles and the Dwight Yoakams and, you know. And, you know, I mean, just look at the last, you know, 10 years. I mean, Brooks and Dunn, you know, I mean, you know, granted they play some country songs, but they play some rock songs too, you know.
Definitely.
And I think if the Eagles came out today, you know, or anybody like that, then, you know, they would have been on country radio, you know. They'd be on country radio today. They wouldn't be on rock radio, you know. Because rock radio is just completely different now, you know, than it was back in the 70s and early 80s.
Oh, for sure. And like you say, the Eagles definitely would be would be an artist for country radio. And even back, I remember growing up and listening to 820 Cham, and I guess other country stations as well would play Lion Eyes and Take It Easy and different Eagles songs. So
yeah,
definitely a country sound. And the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, similar kind of sound, of course, in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, on the country side of things, so those were some of the rock influences, were there people from the country field, either when you were younger or as you were on the charts, that you quite enjoy listening to?
Well, when I was younger, I mean, and this is very younger, it was, we had AM radio,
Right.
We didn't have FM radio. You know, FM radio came around in about 1971 or 72, I suppose, And,
yep.
So on AM radio, I mean, you got to hear, Motown, you got to hear country, you got to hear rock, you got to hear soft rock, hard rock, country rock, folk music.
Yeah.
So some of the people, and I'm a songwriter, I just love a good song. I don't really care whether it's a rock song or a country song. And so I love, songwriters, like Johnny Cash was one of my favorites, and Kris Kristofferson, and... another guy, some of the guys who wrote songs for him, Kenny Rogers had some great songs, And,
yeah.
People like, even in the early 80s, Randy Travis, who doesn't write his own songs, but, just the songwriters, they always had some great songs, And so I really appreciate, I really like listening to those kind of people.
Yeah, those are all great artists, and it's interesting you mentioned when radio did that back in the day. I think it was kind of cool to have the mixture, like you say, you could listen to it, and it wasn't one format. It was kind of got a bit of everything, and it's the song that stood out most of all, which is really cool.
Yeah, it had to be a very good song to make it to the format,
Yeah.
And I don't want to disparage anybody today, but it's a, any station, I'm a channel surfer, now, because of the format, you have to listen to country on one station, you have to listen to rock on another, you have to listen to older rock on another, soft rock on another. But in the format that it is now, you end up having to listen to five bad songs to get one good song,
Right.
Whereas back when you got everybody vying for a spot in the top 20 or the top 40, whether they come from rock or country or folk or you get the best of all of those,
Right.
And so you don't have to listen to real bad songs, if you're just listening to for a good song, You might not
Definitely.
Like rock music. If you don't like rock music, I guess you're not going to like the song. But, as a songwriter, though, personally, I just thought it was great, because you got to hear all these great songs, and no matter what format it was,
Now, with the songwriting, Charlie, how far does that go back with you? Were you like a young kid and started writing your first songs?
I was probably, about 12 or 13, I guess, when I wrote my first song. I've been writing kind of poetry before then, But my first actual song, I remember sitting down and writing when I think it was about 13 or so.
Wow, and was that with the guitar or?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very cool. I actually did that first two poetry for a while before I got into writing and song lyrics. Of course, a different kind of structure. Those first songs you wrote, can you look back on them and think proudly of them, or were they more of a learning experience to get to the better ones?
I can look back and cringe. But they were honest,
Yep.
They were honest attempts at at explaining myself and whatever situations I was in, my emotional place in life and
sure.
Stuff like that. So but it is it's a craft, you have to learn it as you go, and it took a while, but I finally got there.
Yep, you got there for sure. Can you remember the first song, or maybe around the time when you actually wrote one that you said, "This is it. This is how a song should be," and you sort of felt like you sort of came across the way to do it?
Yeah, I thought the first song I wrote, I thought was great. It's only in hindsight you realize how bad it was,
That's so true. Yep.
At the time, it's gosh, this is amazing, like I'm Lennon and McCartney here,
That's right.
Whatever, and then you play it to your friends and they just think it's amazing, because you're writing a song,
Yeah.
And they think, oh, that's just great, And of course, sometimes bad advice is not the best advice you're getting.
as time goes on, you realize, well, then you start to write better ones. And I guess at a certain point, you play for an audience, like you say, those are for the family. But once you start to play outside or even for a label, you start to realize quickly what they're looking for.
Well, exactly. You know, I mean, when you start playing, you know, I started playing clubs in, you know, my early teens, you know, and you know, when you start playing your own songs, you know, you start getting a real good grasp of what, you know, people like or they don't like, or and the reasons they don't like it, or, you know, and you just sort of hone yourself from there, you know.
For the first album, the Other Side, of course, it spawned six number one hits, but choosing the material for that, did you, and most of it was you had a hand in writing as opposed to outside songs, but did you write a ton of songs to narrow it down to the ones chosen for that?
By the time I got my record deal, I pretty much had written basically my first three CDs, you know.
Oh, wow.
First three albums. And so it was kind of trying to mostly whittle it down to, you know, what songs work best together, you know, in a package, you know. And
sure.
You know, the first CD and the second CD and the third one, and then it was, you know, so just trying to find the best fit, you know, of songs together, you know. As a basic, you know, a rough theme, let's say, you know.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, I kept writing, and you know, during that time also, you know, and but for the most part, I mean, I've been working a long time, you know. I mean, I was 35 years old by the time I got to make my first CD, you know.
Right.
So I had a lot of years, you know, of writing songs before I got to that point, you know.
Sure, and it's interesting how you talk about the songs working together on an album. And the album, I think, as we all know, is sort of an art form. A lot of artists talk about the same thing, how it's sort of all the songs are either related or there's sort of an overall theme to an album. Do you think these days, of course, with downloading and people can just sort of buy one song, do you think, you know, that art form is something that should be kept and is important, the album itself?
I'm going to go out on a limb here. Not really a limb. I mean, I've talked to my record company with EMI right now, you know, and we're just in the middle of making an album, you know, with them. And but at the same time, you know, it's where I'm as the artist, I'm thrilled to be making an album. As the businessman and as a consumer, I believe the album art form is pretty much dead. You know, I think that you know, the days of you going in to the HMV, which will probably be closed in 5 years from now, and I said that probably 2 years ago, so, you know, I'll say next 3 years, you know. You know, I mean, I as a consumer, I do the same thing. I mean, I don't download the whole album, you know.
Right.
I'll go out and I'll hear a song on the radio or whatever, and I'll go and get that song. And, you know, some, of course, nowadays you get to listen to, you know, say 30 seconds of a song, you know,
yeah.
You know, for all the songs that are on an album, you know, let's say. And, you know, you can tell in the first 30 seconds whether it's a good song or not, you know.
Oh, for sure.
I hate to be that judgmental, you know, but it's basically true, you know.
Oh, yeah, I think all of us.
I'm not saying for me as a songwriter or as a musician. I just mean as a consumer, you know. I don't believe that I have any more special talent than anybody else who's listening to the radio, you know. In figuring out that, you know, you hear 30 seconds of a song, well, you pretty well know whether it's a good song or not, you know,
mm-hmm.
and whether you're going to like it, you know. And so I think, you know, the days of, like I said, you know, putting out an album, they're pretty much coming to an end, I think, you know. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, but it is what it is. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You know? It seems to be in that direction. And I kind of miss... because I do download songs as well, not always buy the full album, but I kind of miss the days when I go and buy a new Alabama or a new Kenny Rogers, and even if I didn't like all the songs, I still kind of liked the idea that I was buying, you know, a package of 10 or 12 songs and kind of excited about it, as opposed to, you know, it's just kind of a different way of, I guess, buying music.
Yeah, it's almost gone retro in the sense of it's almost like KTEL records now, again,
yeah.
You know? Where you can just buy one song from everybody, you know?
Right.
And you buy their best song, you know?
Yeah.
And compile it on your MP3 player, you know? And you've got all these good songs from different people, you know? As opposed to, you know, 10 songs and of one artist, and then, you know, you're skipping tracks, you know?
Exactly.
You know, and the only unfortunate part about that, though, is, you know, is that there's songs, you know, that you write on an album that you don't necessarily write them as, you know, I don't know that you ever, obviously you're trying to write good songs, you're trying to write a great song, you know, but I don't know that I've ever written a song that I said, you know, I'm going to try and write this for it to be a number one song, you know?
Right.
That's almost ridiculous, you know? You know, at the same time, you know, like when I, you know, got songs on albums that were never singles, you know,
mm-hmm.
that have meant so much to people, you know? And these days, I don't know if they get to hear those anymore, you know? I mean, I think if there's one format, you know, if there's one genre of music that basically is still true to the album, you know, it's probably country, you know.
Yeah.
Because most of the people that are downloading are you know, under 35, you know, but they're college, you know, people more metropolitan, you know.
Sure.
And I think, you know, the people who are the country music bands, not that they don't have computers, because everybody's got one now, you know. But
yep.
I think they're just a lot more loyal in that sense, you know, of going out and like you say, you know, having the physical, you know,
yeah,
of music in your hand, you know. And I think, as I said, I think, you know, country music is the last bastion of the actual full album, you know.
Yeah.
We'll be the last to go.
Very cool. Well, let's turn to the music, Charlie. I want to head back to 1993 and the first big hit, I'm Going to Drive You Out of My Mind. I can recall hearing this many, many times and seeing it on CMT back in the day. So do you want to talk about the inspiration behind the song, and then I'll share it with our listeners?
Wow. You know, that's going way back.
Yeah. Time flies.
The inspiration of the song was, God, was just, you know, I was thinking back to, you know, most of the time I always have to, know where I'm going when I write a song. You know,
right.
I can't, I have started writing songs, you know, where I'll write a first verse and it'll take me 3 years to figure out where the hell the song's going, you know.
Wow.
But if I've got a chorus, then it's easy to write a song, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I know where I'm going, you know.
Yep.
And I had the chorus for this song for a little while, and I knew it was about, you know, kind of youthful, you know, kind of anger, you know, immature, mm-hmm. kind of being upset, you know, at you know, a breakup, you know, and or whether it was even a breakup, you know, it was just you know, an argument, you know, and
mm-hmm.
It's something that, I mean, I've been through, you know, and you know, where you just get in the car and say, you know, screw this, you know.
Yeah.
You step on the gas and you just, you know, drive, you know.
You're
pissed off and you're doing 120 miles an hour, which it shouldn't be, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, you know, I'm just going to keep driving and, you know, I'm going to just drive you out of my mind. You know, that's all, you know.
Yeah.
And,
it's a cool hook and it's very catchy. When you
yeah.
were done writing it with Barry, did it feel like like you don't try to write a hit, but did it feel pretty something people would want to hear?
I think so. You know, I was pretty proud of that song, and I'm
yeah.
pretty proud of most of the songs that I've written, you know, and I pretty much, I don't know, you know, like I say, you know, I'm a commercial guy, you know. I grew up listening to commercial radio, you know.
Yeah.
So I know how to write hooks, and I know, you know, how to build a song, and you know, the, you know, the bridges and the channels and, you know, and the musical hooks and, you know,
sure.
there's a whole lot that goes into a song, you know.
Sure.
And, I'm pretty good at that, you know, and so when I write a song, it's like, I kind of know it's a good song. Do I know whether it's going to sell or not? Not necessarily, you know. I mean, you know, there's times, I mean, I've had songs come out that I thought, there's no way, you know. You know.
And then it's gone on to do well.
Yeah, you know. I mean, It Can't Happen to Me is a song like that, you know, that just, I thought, man, you know, this is like, this is so, so not country, you know? Like,
right.
I mean, just the whole topic, like, you know, everything, you know,
yep.
I mean, it's a pretty heavy song, you know?
Very heavy song, yeah.
And I just thought, you know, like, I mean, I definitely wrote it because I wanted to write it. It's think something that happened to me, you know, and to some, you know, family around me, you know? And I thought it was an important song, you know.
Yeah.
Really did. And I thought the sentiment was very accurate, you know, in the sense of, you know, we all think that. We all think we're immortal, you know, and invincible when we're younger, you know. And also to another degree when we get older, you know, of, you know, you've got heart disease. Well, you know, it doesn't happen to me, you know.
Yeah.
It can't happen to me. It's, you know, my house doesn't burn down. That's the neighbor's house burns down, not mine, you know.
Yeah.
But when we're younger, I mean, it's much, much bigger, you know, manifested, you know, and you know, I mean, I've got two teenage boys, and that's what they're going through right now, you know. They're like invincible, you know, and it's like, guys, you're not.
You know? Something we takes a while to learn.
Some people never learn, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, just like that. So that song, you know, I you know, when they released that, you know, I thought, huh, you know, I don't think that's, you know, there's better songs to release than that one, you know. I didn't mean better, but I just meant.
Yeah, maybe more commercial or more ones you would bet on would do well. But I know what you mean. Sometimes songs seem like obvious hits and other ones not so much, but yet the public, the listeners really embrace them because I guess there's a truth in them or something people are wanting to hear.
It's absolutely, I mean, you know, that song along with The Other Side are two of the biggest songs. I mean, when we play shows, I mean, people know all the words. People, you know,
yeah.
Sing along. We can stop playing, and they sing along, and they, you know, and that's, it's like they came to hear those two songs, you know.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, let's play, we'll come back and talk a lot more, but I'll play that song now. I'm going to Drive You Out of My Mind, which was the first big hit out of the album The Other Side, released back in 1993. This is Charlie Major on In the Country.
Keep on driving.
Again, that is country artist Charlie Major. I'm Gonna Drive You Out of My Mind from his debut album back in 1993, the album called The Other Side. We're speaking with Charlie on the line. And since then, you've done five albums as you've gone along. And your most recent one, Charlie, Shadows and Light, that's one that you co-produced?
Yeah, actually, I co-produced that one. I produced the one before that and co-produced the one before that. And just like to have my hands in things, you know.
Very cool. So what's the difference for those who don't know as an artist if you're just singing on it versus singing plus doing some producing on it? What extra stuff do you do?
It boils down to, even from that, listening back to that song, you know, I haven't heard that in a long time, you know. I mean, we play it, you know, but
yep.
You know, it's actually listening to it, you know. And, you know, I'm a real kind of workaholic in the sense of, you know, when I write a song, I wrote, I'm Driving Out of My Mind, you know, I kind of co-produced everything I've done, you know, because you're writing all the arrangements, you know. And,
right.
I mean, I wrote all I wrote the guitar parts for that song, you know. I wrote the drum intro for that song, you know.
Oh, nice.
All the vocals, all the backing vocals, you know, I already know what they're going to sound like before I get in the studio, you know. That's sort of what it entails, you know. A producer will come in and, you know, you've got a song and, you know, you've got a certain idea, you know, and a lot of people just go in and say, okay, well, you know, let's see if this harmony works. Let's see if this one works. Let's see if this guitar lick works. And I go in and, I already know what it's going to sound like, you know.
Right.
So there's no, I don't like guessing, you know.
Yeah.
Go into the studio, you know. Sometimes, you know, the odd time something doesn't work and you come up with something better, you know. But for the most part, it's like The Other Side, you know, that song, you know. I wrote the guitar lick in that song, you know, very simple, you know. Took me, I think, about 12 hours one day to write that very simple guitar lick.
Wow.
And drove everybody in the house crazy, you know. You know, my wife.
But you had to get it. You had to get it just right, eh?
Well, you know, it's only like, you know, about eight notes, you know, but they had to be all in the right sequence, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, so licks and those kind of eight notes can be so memorable that I guess it's worth the work to go in because, you know, it can make or break a song.
Well, that's right, you know. I mean,
there's
more to, you know, as I was saying earlier. Oh,
I think we lost Charlie there. Actually, we did. I'm sure he'll call us right back. I think there was just a connection problem on his phone, and we'll get back and let him finish his thought. Got another song coming up momentarily we'll play from Charlie's CD from the year 2000. The album called 444. The song is Like Our Love, a song Charlie wrote. We will get to that momentarily. Speaking with Charlie on the line, talking all about his great career starting back in the early 90s and continuing to today, still touring and keeping busy with all his projects. And got some interesting questions coming up. I also want to ask Charlie about a song he wrote for Ricky Van Shelton that climbed the charts back in the mid-90s. A song called Backroads. So I'll ask him all about how he managed to have Ricky record that song. Just waiting for Charlie to call back here. And we'll give him another moment. What we'll do while we're waiting for Charlie to call back, Charlie Major is my guest on the show today. I'll play his song from the year 2000. It's called Like Our Love. Again, that's from his album 444, put out in the year 2000. This is Charlie Major here on In the Country. Thank you. And that is One True Love from our guest Charlie Major, taken from his 2000 album called 444. And Charlie rejoins me on the line. I think we had a little technical glitch there.
We had a technical glitch. I'm actually on my cell phone right now because I live out in the country.
Okay.
For some inexplicable reason, maybe once a month, my phone goes dead, my house phone.
Right.
Usually when it rains, but it's not raining here. It's been beautiful for the last few days. So I have no idea why the phone went. Here I am. I'm back on my cell phone.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, yeah, you're coming in nice and clear. So I think we were talking about the hooks and the time spent on getting eight notes in a row right for it to make or break a song.
Yeah, I think, I think that before we got cut off, I was just at the point of saying, you know, that, you know, most great songs you hear, you know, that you recognize it before the person even starts singing, you know?
Yeah.
Because the musical hook is just as important, you know, as the vocal hook, you know? And so, it, you know, whether it's three notes or four notes or eight or, you know, it has,
yeah,
to be, it has to be something memorable, you know? You know, and think of a million songs that, you know, when I turn on the radio or put on something, you know, right away, I know,
yep,
that song.
Definitely.
So,
now you've done. Sorry, Charlie. You've done the majority of writing on your CDs or co-writing. Now I've noticed over the albums, there's sometimes just one song on each, or not even that many that is from an outside writer. When you do choose those outside songs, what sort of thought goes into it?
Well, the only outside writer that I've actually song I've done by an outside writer was actually on the first album was song by Don Schlitz called Life's Too Short, and it wasn't for lack of having enough songs. You know, the first CDs written before when I was, and but a friend of mine from Nashville had sent me up this songwriter series,
right?
That the RCA does, and it's right, you know, only Don doesn't record it, you know, except to do this kind of songwriter series, and it was a song that nobody had recorded, and as soon as I heard the song, I mean, first, like, you know, basically 30 seconds was like, God, you know, I could have written this song, you know, and I mean, it sounds just like me, you know, and I just met one of the song, and I mean, I thought the hook was great, I mean, you know, short, you know, the whole sentiment of the song was great,
yeah,
you know? So I thought, you know, hey, I want to record this song, you know, and it wasn't necessarily for the first CD, but then, you know, as I said, and, you know, you sit around and try and figure out a theme of the album, you know. It fit really well with the rest of the CD. And, you know, the other people I've recorded, you know, I recorded a song called The Alamo. It was done by Donovan back in the early 60s.
Right.
He's a folk singer. And, I just always loved that song. I've been playing it since I could play guitar, you know. And a Neil Diamond song on another CD, Thank the Lord for the Nighttime.
Yeah.
I was always a big Neil Diamond fan, and that song since it came out, probably about 97. I'm giving away my age now.
Nobody's going to do the math.
When I was two. I started playing when I was two. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I recorded another song on another, I think on 44 actually, was Old Sister by Bob Dylan. You know,
right.
I was a big Dylan fan, and I just always loved the sentiment of the song, and so it's just kind of me paying homage, you know, to some of the songwriters that
yeah,
you know, I've always enjoyed, you know, over the years.
Now, what about favorite cover songs? So there's a couple there that you did cover for the albums. When you're performing live, are there certain songs, classic songs, or more recent songs that you enjoy performing?
We haven't done you know, too many cover songs ever, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I say this in a quite, you know, thankful and fortunate sense that, you know, I've had enough hits over the years, you know, that I don't have to go out and play anybody else's songs, you know.
That's nice. Nice position to be in.
Oh, it is, absolutely. Yeah. You know, if they're, there were some songs, you know, I think we've played, you know, a John Cougar song here and there, you know, a few years ago, quite a few, probably about 10 years ago. But
yeah.
I haven't done any real cover tunes in about 10 years. We used to do a Steve Earle song called I Ain't Ever Satisfied, which is probably songs where I thought, you know, I could have written this, you know. That's about it.
Yeah. Now, Charlie, I wanted to ask you about the, I remember at the time, the Ricky Van Shelton song, Backroads, that was recorded. And I think I remember the story, hearing it back then, but you want to share that story, how you got that song to Ricky and it ended up being recorded?
I don't remember anymore. I'm kidding. at a show, Ricky came to town here with, to my hometown with, Willie Nelson.
Right.
1989 or so. And I'd been down in Nashville a few months earlier and done a demo CD of about 10 songs, and Backroads was on that song, on that album.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the show, and friends of mine were working backstage from the radio station. And another friend of mine said, you know, why don't we, you know, get this CD, tape to them. It wasn't a CD, it was a tape. And I said, well, you know, I mean, you've heard how rocky my stuff is, you know. And I just thought, you know, I mean, I enjoyed Ricky because I think he's a great singer, you know. I mean, that's why we were at the show, you know.
Right.
But, I just thought, well, you know, nobody's, you know, we're certainly not going to do any of these songs, you know. And, you know, I certainly can't hear Ricky saying, can't happen to me, which was on the tape.
Right.
And or, you know, I can't remember what else was on there. But anyway, so he went and gave the tape to somebody backstage, one of the people working from the station. And apparently they ended up giving it to Ricky's bus driver. And Ricky's bus driver was, I think they were on their way to Philadelphia the next day, and put it into their tape player, the bus, while they were driving down Philadelphia. And Ricky called me 2 days later, and I thought it was April Fool's Day, which kind of sent up a
didn't
red
help.
Flag, my, you know.
Yep.
Because I thought it was my friends playing a joke on me, you know. And I kind of said that to Ricky. I didn't know it was Ricky. So, you know, I mean, he had an accent, you know, and all, but because
yeah.
He's from Virginia, you know. But I said, yeah, sure, whatever, you know. Or, you know, who is this? Come on. I'm like, you know, just own up to it, you know.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, really? Really? It's me, you know?
Wow.
And he actually started singing on the phone. And as soon as he started singing, I was like, okay, you know.
You knew it was him.
This guy's boss, and he's still on the phone, you know. So it was pretty cool. It was a pretty neat experience. You know?
Very cool, I'll bet. We just got a few minutes left here. I'll encourage our listeners to head to charliemajor.com. And I guess from there they can get updates and find out about any new music in the months ahead.
Yeah, and we've got our you know, tour schedule up there, and you know, we've got all you know, videos and stuff like that. Places they can buy it, online. The old music they want, you know.
Yep.
Or we were talking earlier on. Things.
Awesome. Well, that's yeah. It's a great site. Lots of information, and you do blogs from time to time, and they can basically catch up with you there. Charlie, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and sharing some of the music and. Look forward to hearing from you again.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
You're so welcome. My guest today has been country artist Charlie Major. Be sure to head over to charliemajor.com and catch up with all the latest news. I'm Dave Woods, and that wraps up this edition of In the Country.
Spend some time in the country. We're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country. Leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone. The best in music too. Spend some time in the country. We've been waiting here for you. Here in the country.